This is Dan Sullivan reading pages 490 through 492 of the mass market edition of Barbara Kingsolver's The Poisonwood Bible. Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. What secret is left in our family to tell? I may have to stop talking again until I can be sure of what I know. I thought I had it settled long ago, you see. My hymn to God, Abel's dog, dog ho, my hymn for love, Eros, Isor. Oh, I knew it all, backward and forward. I learned the balance of power in one long Congolese night when the driver ants came, the bang on the door, the dark hustle and burning feet, and last of all Ada dragging the permanent sing-song of her body left behind. Out into the moonlight where the ground boiled and there stood Mother like a tree rooted motionless in the middle of the storm. Mother staring at me, holding Ruth May in her arms, weighing the two of us against one another. The sweet, intact child with golden ringlets and perfectly paired strong legs, or the dark, mute adolescent dragging a stubborn, disjunct half-body. Which, after hesitating only a second, she chose to save perfection and leave the damaged. Everyone must choose. Live was I ere I saw evil, I wrote in my journal. Alive one moment, dead the next, because that is how my divided brain divined the world. There was room in Ada for naught but pure love and pure hate. Such a life is satisfying and deeply uncomplicated. Since then, my life has become much more difficult, because later on, she chose me. In the end, she chose she could only carry one child alive out of Africa, and I was that child. Would she rather have had Ruth May? Was I the booby prize? Does she look at me and despise her loss? Am I alive only because Ruth May is dead? What truth can I possibly tell? Recently, I rifled through the history of our father, an old trunk full of his things. I needed to find his military discharge papers, which would provide for me some benefits in the domain of college tuition. I found more than I was looking for. His medal, as we were always told, was not for heroic service. It is simply for having been wounded and having survived. For escaping from a jungle where all others marched to their deaths. No more than that. The conditions of his discharge were technically honorable, but unofficially they were cowardice, guilt, and disgrace. The Reverend, the sole survivor in a company of dead men who have marched along beside him all his life since then. No wonder he could not flee from the same jungle twice. Mother told me a part of the story, and I realized I already knew the rest. Fate sentenced our father to pay for those lives with the remainder of his, and he has spent it posturing desperately beneath the eyes of a God who will not forgive a debt. This God worries me. Lately, he has been looking in on me. My sleep is visited by Ruth May and the many other children who are buried near her. They cry out, Mother, may I? And the mothers crawl forward on hands and knees, trying to eat the dirt from their babies' fresh graves. The owls still croon and croon, and the air is thick with spirits. This is what I carried out of the Congo on my crooked little back. In our 17 months in Kalanga, 31 children died, including Ruth May. Why not Ada? I can think of no other answer that exonerates me. Mother's reasons for saving me were as complicated as fate itself, I suppose. Among other things, her alternatives were limited. Once she betrayed me, once she saved me. Fate did the same to Ruth May, in the opposite order. Every betrayal contains a perfect moment, a coin stamped heads or tails with salvation on the other side. Betrayal is a friend I have known on a long time, a two-faced goddess looking forward and back with a clear, earnest suspicion of good fortune. I have always felt I would make a clear-eyed scientist on account of it. As it turns out, though, betrayal can also breed penitents, shrewd minor politicians, and ghosts. Our family seems to have produced one of each. Carry us, marry us, ferry us, bury us. Those are our four ways to Exodus for now. Though, to tell the truth, none of us has yet safely made the crossing. Except for Ruth May, of course. We must wait to hear word from her. I rode on the ferry. Until that morning when we all went to the riverbank, I still believed Mother would take Leah, not me. Leah, who, even in her malarial stupor, rushed forward to crouch with the battery in the canoe and counter its odd tilt. I was outshone as usual by her heroism, but as we watched that pirogue drift away across the Kwenge, Mother gripped my hand so tightly I understood I had been chosen. She would drag me out of Africa if it was her last living act as a mother. I think, probably, it was.